18 of our transitioning students participated in that program over the summer. Like I said, there's another program coming up in the winter. So, that's been an extremely successful program. We've gotten nothing but good feedback. They were one of the first to kind of launch the online programs, and it's gone well, and they've continued to develop more programs. We had a Mentor Day event that was held virtually. It was actually held by teleconference for our transition aid students on October 15th. There's three mentors that were presenting and talking with our students. I didn't put the number, but I want to say there was about 10 that had participated in that. Sorry, I took notes and I forgot to put the number. But it was pretty successful. There was about 10 to 15 that participated in that. There's actually another one being held December 16th, next week. And this is for adults as well as our transition age. And I know that 10 have registered currently. It's the same three mentors that are going to be presenting on their success, working as a job and just answering any questions. And I know we're looking for more, so they, sent it out kind of a mass mailing again, so there'll probably be more that will participate. We're pretty active in the 8th Annual Disability Resource Fair that was held virtually this year. We do this every year. It's the 8th annual one. It's in the Hartford area in collaboration with the AJC. And it was all online this year and was a successful event. We do that in honor of National Employment for Individuals with Disabilities, which is in October. So that kind of went on us. It was smaller than it normally is, but it sounds like it was very successful. Our staff have participated in a couple virtual panels. Barry Rita participated in three virtual panels on the State Department of Education regarding our transitioning services offered at FSC. Charlotta Copenhaver sat on a panel that was held nationally. It was actually coordinated by the state agency in Illinois, but she presented on our collaboration with the AJCs and BSBY, which is, went really well. Just regarding where we're at, regarding job placements and unfortunately, many of our community rehab providers that we contract out with have been furloughed or running on very small staff. A couple have dropped off contract. So that hasn't, gone that smoothly, since the pandemic started. There are some that are coming back on board, increasing their services, but it's hard, if you're looking for a new job to find a new job. Now, I know one of the comments earlier was regarding whether it was, helpful for our clients going online. I think it is for the clients who are currently working, but I think it hasn't been all that successful finding new employment for online work, primarily because of the economy taking such a big hit. There's a lot of people who are laid off, so there's not many new jobs coming out available online. We have many of our clients who have kept their jobs and worked, have been working online. So a lot of what we've been working with is making sure that they're able to successfully do that with the technology and the support. So many have kept their jobs. Many have lost their jobs. I accidentally muted myself. It's been a bad year as far as employment for us, to say the least. But we're certainly working, every day to try to find more employment for individuals who are looking for work, and helping to keep people who are employed. So that's pretty much it.
Thanks, Mary. Any questions for Mary?
Yes, this is Eileen. A couple of questions. I know that other agencies have had a problem regarding achieving maintenance's effort. I'm wondering how we're stacking up with that.
That would be a Brian question, regarding the budget. I don't know.
I'll be happy to cover that under the budget update.
Okay, and again, I don't know if this other question, who is appropriate to answer this, but there was, again, the last meeting minutes from March, I guess. From June. I don't know where we are.
September.
Okay. Yes. Thank you. I don't even know if Easter is coming or what's going on. Anyway, there was mention of employing or looking for two more orientation and mobility instructors, and that one was supposed to be perhaps an internal shift. I don't know who could comment on that for me.
That sounds like a budget question.
I'll be happy to talk about the vacant positions when I give the budget update.
Well then, thank you.
And Beth said to reiterate that we're in Voc Rehab. We are looking for orientation mobility, so it wouldn't be out of Voc Rehab. Currently, we don't have any orientation and mobility instructors that are funded out of Voc Rehab. So the plan is going forward that we are going to put more orientation mobility into Voc Rehab.
Thank you, and welcome back.
Thank you.
Any other Voc Rehab questions? Steve?
Yeah, Mary, this is Stephen. Welcome back.
Thank you.
The question I have, what do you see going forward that the board can help you with in terms of the job? And number two, will the shift, and it appears to me to be a big shift in the medical field, the way medical services are being offered, is that going to be an opportunity for some of our clients to get into the field, get training, and be part of that?
I'll answer the healthcare piece because there is definitely an interest in from a few of our clients. But like I said, there's a couple going into that healthcare certificate program, and there are definitely, a few that have expressed an interest in that field. We are looking because a lot of the online, their case management system, with Epic, it's called, which is pretty much the entire healthcare system, at least in the South Central, I believe in the Hartford as well. Yale and every affiliate Yale has uses that program. So I know that there's been some looking into that from our technologists regarding whether that's accessible or not, because they continuously update it. But we've had a couple opportunities for data entry, for some of our clients. So it's not necessarily even hands-on healthcare, but a lot of the clerical positions as well as some of the other positions, because the healthcare field, like you said, is definitely hiring. So our counselors are very aware of it. Our technologists are looking into it, and there was a lot of discussion in the board meetings and the planning meetings with the American Job Centers because of things have changed and shifted. They used to have a hospitality training program, they used to have a daycare, a training program, and those are not as common now because they're not hiring as much in those industries. So they've actually shifted their programs to meet the kind of demand, which is definitely healthcare. So there's a lot of online programs and certificate programs in collaboration with the local community colleges, those programs are. So, there's a collaboration with, Gateway and the South Central region. So there's definitely a push for that for the American Job Centers, and our counselors are definitely working on that. We had a discussion about it recently, and like I said, regarding the accessibility. Unfortunately, they've become very computerized when it comes to, there's a MyChart and different things. Probably people are aware of it, and it's not 100% accessible, even as accessing it as a patient, it's hard for our clients. So I know we're looking into that. The best, way that we can look into that is to, kind of take it individual, regarding their job path that they'll have to do. But we're going to seek out a human resources director to see if we can kind of look into it beforehand, before we have somebody who applies. So that's where we're at as far as healthcare, but we're definitely looking into that. As far as the board is assistant, thank you for the offer for that, and I will think about it. I can't think of anything currently, but I will definitely keep that in mind because I could see that, you know, I could see taking advantage of that offer. But right now, I can't think of anything. We're just kind of taking it day by day and kind of going with the trends of you know, what we're seeing now. And it's definitely online, you know, an online training. So for individuals who are not employed, you know, where I've been laid off or looking to reenter, the push is definitely collaboration with the American Job Centers and getting individuals online in, you know, training to be able to access those skills. So that's kind of where we're at now. And we recently had a discussion with the blind, you know, who have, you know, very good deals on computers. So we do, you know, individual clients can individually purchase computers if they don't meet the criteria for Voc Rehab. But we're also looking to have Voc Rehab purchase a lot more laptops and access for our clients to be able to participate. We're prohibited because of our policy to pay for internet, you know, because of the data plan. But we're also looking into reduced internet costs for some of our clients who, you know, have hardships to be able to afford it. You know, so those are all the things that we're looking into, or ways that we can have individuals access. You know, but you know, right now the libraries are still open. But so some of our clients go to the library to access Wi-Fi, but. Luckily, that hasn't come up too much as a barrier, but, you know, we're certainly looking to help financially if, you know, help them out financially, even though we can't pay for it. So those are all the things we're working on currently, but definitely getting people the resources they need to be able to do online is a push for us, because that seems to be one of the biggest barriers currently. You know, if they didn't have it, you know, they need to get stuff to be able to access some of these programs that are available, or even to work on, you know, from home. So, yeah.
On the topic of MyChart Plus and its equivalents, that reminds me, does Voc Rehab have any clients who are interested in pursuing IT careers? Because that seems to me to be an excellent opportunity for somebody who's interested in information technology as a career.
Right.
Yeah, we do, actually. We had that one person participate in the online IT program at World Services for the Blind, and I think they're currently still in that program. And there is, again, an IT certificate program through the AJCs, and we have a couple people participating in that. So yeah, there's definitely an interest in that field as well. So those are all, you know, I know there may be people who have that certificate that, you know, I'll send out an email just to say, make sure that you, you know, let people who do have that certificate know that they can actually, you know, access some of those jobs, because those are definitely good online jobs, you know, so yeah. And yeah, it's a huge program, MyChart. It's called Epic, you know, it's iChart, it's everything within the hospital system. In any doctor's office that's affiliated with the system, you know, so, you know, it's a worthwhile, you know, activity to try to get that accessible, but we don't know how cumbersome it will be or if it's even possible, but we're definitely looking into it.
That's great. Thanks, Mary. Any other questions for Mary? Hearing none, let's move on to the next item then. We have CV-19 updates. Brian, you have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, obviously, I think we've already had some updates. We had public comments. We've had our BEP supervisor, Voc Rehab supervisor, all speaking to how COVID has had such a tremendous impact on the work that we are all doing, Connecticut and the nation as a whole. And I feel that the staff of the Bureau have been tremendous in their efforts to adapt to an environment that seems to be changing with some alarming frequency. Not that long ago, our governor had to issue some scale back rules around businesses and public gatherings and things of that nature, and I share that information with many folks as frequently as I can, but I just want to remind everybody that the governor does have a dedicated website specifically to get coronavirus updates, to read what the business sector rules are, what public gathering rules are, and they're very important, and I ask everyone to please take the initiative to stay personally current on what the latest developments are with COVID. The governor's website is ct.gov/coronavirus. And again, you can also sign up to get your own direct updates if you go there. In terms of where we are at, during the summer, we were able to develop some protocols to allow for the reintroduction of in-person services. And those protocols are still in place and available, but we are looking very closely at where there are requests for in-person services to see if there's virtual alternatives that can be provided to address the service request. Now, we recognize that, you know, in the past, BSBE was very much an itinerant-based service delivery model with services occurring in the homes, in educational settings, and businesses. Coronavirus has certainly changed a lot of the ways that government delivers services, and we have to always consider safety first. Safety not only for our staff, but safety for those individuals that we would be meeting with. Am I still connected?
Yes.
Okay, I heard a funny voice. I just wanted to be sure that I didn't get disconnected. Thank you. So with that in mind, for right now, we started off the school year with some of the school districts having in-person class settings. Some school districts that were not, and some that had a hybrid. But I think that as we've seen the spike in COVID, many of the school districts that had in person have had to make decisions for returning to virtual-based services. Similarly, Invoke Rehab, as Mary Burgard reported, there were some community rehab providers that were starting to kind of reopen their doors to in-person services, but with the spike in COVID, there's been somewhat of a rolling back of some of those offerings that are available to our clients. So it is a very dynamic situation, and you know, we've had to make decisions about how to best utilize our staff availability in a virtual type of an environment, how they are producing their work. We've had to make many adjustments along the way as we go. And so some of the things that we were able to do pre-COVID, we've sort of had to put on hold for right now in order to address the essential needs that we have in terms of serving our clients. So with that in mind, I would again just encourage folks to continue to stay up to date with what the governor is putting out, because there are very specific and detailed guidances that are being put out in terms of what can and cannot be done, and gathering sizes and things like that, how to protect yourself from COVID, and also any updates on the rollout of the vaccine, the timing of that vaccine. You could also find that information through there. Are there any questions that folks have about COVID, about where we are with things?
It's Eileen with just one question, Brian. BSBE was looking into like clear masks for people who are deafblind.
Correct. We have them, and we did offer them to all of the vendors that provide services to our clients that are deaf and blind.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Brian?
Brian,
Steve. Yep, Steve, go ahead. Yep.
Just wanted you to know, most of you know that I'm in the retirement community down here in Wallingford, and we are following three or four levels of how to handle this COVID virus. Not only the governor, but we're also doing it because we have our own people here that are, and we've been under lockdown for quite some time. It's just different levels. Right now, we're under where we can't have visitors, meals are delivered to us, that kind of stuff. And plus, I've been leading my Masonic Lodge, and we've been doing all the meetings by Zoom this year, and we're finding a lot of benefits that we're learning, or I call it lessons learned, doing this. So I think, you know, there are positive things that will benefit the agency, I believe, in the long run, as we go forward and start to utilize some of these other alternative methods that we haven't considered. So I just wanted to bring that out, that it's not all bad, it's just, it's a whole new rethinking, relearning, and I think we'll be better for it down the road. Thank you.
Thank you, Stephen. I concur that there are certainly some positive lessons learned, and I think that the most positive one is that we are all discovering that virtual delivery of services does bring with it efficiencies. In the past, staff were traveling, in some cases, 3 hours a day between appointments, and travel time is almost down to nothing right now. So staff have more time in order to provide services in a virtual way. And also there's the savings in terms of all the gasoline and the vehicle utilization reimbursements that went with the use of the state vehicles or reimbursements in private vehicles. So there's been some cost savings that are associated with that. And I would also concur that I think that some of the activities that we've learned to do in a virtual way will not necessarily go away when COVID is cured. We've been able to have students participating in summer programs virtually, and some of those individuals would have never been in a position that they could have gone out of state if those programs were being held physically at those out-of-state locations. So it has opened up doors for certain individuals that previously may not have had those opportunities for whatever their personal circumstances were. Similarly, when we look at the number of employers that we're hearing are likely to continue some type of telework or virtual type of work environment once COVID is over, because it represents cost savings in terms of the space they need to rent and the parking lot space they need to pay for and things like that. Transportation stops being a problem for individuals if the job is virtual. And in the past, one of the first questions we would have asked when a job opportunity was brought to our attention is, well, can the client get there? Is there a bus that would get them there? Things like that. If the job is virtual, then while we're dealing with the technology solution that we need to look at, if we, the travel impediments are greatly lessened. So I concur that there are lessons learned, and we are, you know, adapting, and there's probably more lessons that will still be learned as we continue through this pandemic, as we all certainly look forward to the end of it.
I just wanted to offer a word of caution. In the post-pandemic world, I just want to be sure that we don't take our eye off the ball, so to speak, in terms of being complacent about transportation, because transportation is not solely for getting to and from work. That's just one part of people's lives. But my concern is that because there might be this attitude that, well, we don't need that much transportation because people can do stuff virtually, we still need to live our lives, and there's the danger that more of us would become more isolated if transportation is thought of as a problem that has been solved, because it is certainly far from that, and it's still going to take a lot of money and a lot of public support. So I just want to be sure that we all understand that this is something that's going to be with us going forward without regard to the opportunities that are presented by doing stuff virtually.
Yeah, I would also add, this is Stephen, I would also add that we need to keep an eye on people that are getting socially isolated. How are we dealing with it? Do we have resources to refer people? Because I've gotten three or four calls on what do we do, how do we handle it. And I think we've got to be mindful, because I know in my own lodge, we set up a calling system. We've been calling the brothers in the lodge 3-4 times a year, the whole roster, to make sure they're okay, if we can try to refer them to a resource. And I'm just curious, Brian, if the emotional aspects of some of our clients are concerned, and do we have resources to build on this? Thank you.
Brian, do you have a comment on that?
Hello?
I'm not hearing anything. I'm hearing you, Steve.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Yes.
I'm sorry about that. For some reason, sometimes my phone seems to cut out. I'm Chris Lassen. Are you still on this call?
Yes, I am. Oh,
okay.
Sorry, I was just removing myself from mute. Yes, and would you like me to respond to some of Steve's points?
If you would please do so, yes. Thank you.
Yes. So it turns out that through aging services at the Department of Aging and Disability Services, there was undertaken a program to reduce social isolation for seniors and persons with disabilities, and we have, using the CARES Act money, we've worked closely to refer some of our clients who we thought were perhaps more likely to be at risk of, significant losses due to social isolation to these programs that are being often managed by the area agencies on the aging with some help from the Centers for Independent Living. So we have, been in touch with the folks at Aging and Disability Services about the general outlines of the project, and we followed it as those have changed a little bit and made some referrals for our clients where we thought that was appropriate. So I'm happy to say that we're collaborating within ADS on those sorts of concerns, Steve. We're also working on seeing how we can nurture the survival of our support groups, not just the one that Besby staff have typically facilitated at the Windsor office, but also some of the ones that are clients have established and run historically around the state under the aegis of different like senior centers or organizations, advocacy organizations. So we are in the beginning stages of trying to make those more easily accessible in a remote fashion. Some of the confusion that we experienced in the early part of this meeting is sort of a testimony to the challenges of facilitating, an online discussion with a bunch of people who, are unaware when whether there's someone who is speaking who is necessarily finished talking. Those sorts of logistical challenges we're trying to identify and find ways to deal with. That's an ongoing and recent focus of our rehabilitation teachers, is trying to provide that kind of assistance to the support groups. We have also, both the rehab teachers and the social workers have been doing a lot of their work remotely of necessity at this point because they felt that they could do that. But that means that they're perhaps emphasizing more than ever telephone contacts with clients. And as Brian said, when there's not a necessity for both the social workers and the rehab teachers to be out in the field driving, that frees up some extra hours for them to be in touch with clients over the phone. So there's enough, this is being recognized and addressed in a number of ways just during the last, I guess it would be about 9 months since we started working remotely. I don't know, do you have other questions, more specific, or is that something of a decent overview for now?
That's fine, thank you. At least we have an idea of what's happening, because I know that it can be confusing at times with all the changes that are going on in all of our lives, not just with our clients, but everyone. Because I know technology has become a big one, because some of the people doing it previously aren't doing it now. And we all need to share the resources so that we can keep functioning.
Stephen, this is Brian. I concur 100% that I think right now, as Mary indicated, we are looking toward trying to ramp up some of our technology options and get some computers into the hands of the clients. She had a meeting set up with computers for the blind, as an example, to see what kind of collaboration might be available there to gain access to some computers that come with that adaptation already installed. And in terms of the training component, we do have a vacancy for a rehab teacher in Voc Rehab that was recruited for. An interview should be underway fairly soon. That's to replace the position that Julie McLean previously held prior to her passing away. And that position is primarily a person who provides training in rehabilitation technology devices. Just to swing back to Alan's earlier comment about transportation, I do want to assure you that we are aware of that, and we are actually working with the Department of Transportation right now on an initiative that we're hoping to be able to move forward with, and these have been some ongoing discussions that we're working on. I'm not at a point in time where I can say we're done, because we're still working on it, but we do recognize the particular challenges around transportation. I guess what I would end with on the COVID update is I'm not even attempting to represent that anything that we're reporting on is ideal. You heard Tyrell Sampson talk about virtually nearly all of the vendors are out of work at the moment. You've heard Mary Bergard talk about how many clients are not working right now. There are tremendous challenges that the agency is continually having to adapt to as COVID has changed around us. And we will continue to implement the very best strategies that we can identify and utilize. But I don't want to represent to anybody that we see this as like an ideal situation. And we are doing the best that we possibly can in this very challenging and dynamic situation. Thank you.
Thanks, Brian. Yep, go ahead, Steve.
Alan. Brian, is this an opportunity to try to get a work group from this advisory board to work with the aging and disability group to start coming up with some thoughts? And is there some way that the advisory board can help rather than we just wait around for something to do?
I guess I would defer to the chair. We have utilized the Deafblind Advisory Committee fairly extensively for helping to develop some protocols for the close contact services. And that worked well. Their feedback was very much appreciated. And I certainly know that I could turn to this advisory board as well as to the SRC if I needed some additional input. But, I'd leave it up to Chairman Sylvester if he wanted to take an additional step beyond that.
Yeah, let me give that some thought, because that does sound like a worthwhile proposition. Right now, the things we're discussing are rather amorphous, and as an example, your contacts with CONDOT haven't really resulted in anything that you can discuss right now, and I think as time passes, we'll have a better idea of what it is, where we need to put our focus. But for the time being, I think I'm satisfied that we are at least not taking things for granted, and that we are working on things like mental health and transportation. Those are probably the two most important things where we need to be directing our attention. And I just want to remind everybody who's not speaking to please put your phone on mute. Go ahead, Eileen.
With the issue of transportation, I just would like to put forth one area of concern that I have, not particular to my area, but people who are blind who seek rides through, paratransit or dial a ride, they don't get notified. They have no way of knowing when a driver arrives. And I know of people who have specifically gone to their transportation areas and brought this up, and nothing has been done. So that a person is waiting for a ride, and they go out early, stand there waiting. The bus had come 15 minutes earlier. They didn't know it, and so they are registered as a no-show, which jeopardizes future rides. I mean, I do not understand why a phone call couldn't be made either from the vehicle or from the office, so that a person who is blind is aware of what's happening with transportation. It's jeopardizing people's ability to get rides, and also placing an undue burden on these people who have to stand out there when they probably really shouldn't be standing because of other health issues. So it just seems this would be a simple solution to find a way so that people would know what the status of their transportation is. Just my comment as to something that might be raised before CONDOT.
Without taking up too much time, because I recognize this is not really the topic that we're on, but
I understand.
I think it's important that if the person of whom you speak is motivated and a little bit computer savvy, I suggest that they get in touch with the rideshare office at CONDOT, because their first recourse is to the local transit district, and unfortunately, the quality and motivation and dedication among our transit districts varies widely. I mean, we're lucky to be.
Oh, yeah.
I'm lucky to be here where GHTD, Greater Hartford Transit District, is a service provider, and they are very attentive, and they make an effort to reach out to the public, but not every transit district is like that. We still have our fair share of cigar chompers who are marking time and not doing very much about customer service. So the way to get to them is to go over their heads, so to speak, to the rideshare division of CONDOT, and should be able to find somebody there who will at least give the person a sympathetic ear and might be able to apply pressure in that manner.
Good. So that's the rideshare. Tell me again what that contact is, please.
I don't know. You have to look it up on the interwebs. The rideshare division of the Connecticut Department of Transportation.
Thank you
very
much.
The contacts there. Check out their contacts. And
good. Thank you.
At least he will have an audience.
Good. Good.
Something else. Any further questions regarding CV-19 updates? Hearing none, let's move on to the next item, which is Personal Adjustment Programs Public Comment Summary. Brian, you have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I did circulate out to folks the public comments that were received, and I hope that folks have had a chance to review them. In person, there were two public commenters, and both of them spoke very positively of the proposed changes. And then we received written comments as well, and there were two written comments. One was a follow-up comment from an individual who had given their verbal comments during the public comment period, just to, again, sort of expound upon their positive perspective of what the proposed policy changes were. And the second public comment blue in color. One, it suggested maybe a clarification, and it was some documentation regarding the appropriateness of an in-state option as referenced in the proposed policy. I'm suggesting that documentation should similarly be referenced where no feasible in-state option exists. And just to respond to that, that is actually part of what has to be done. And when the rehab teacher mobility instructor make their summarization, they literally say in there, this is not something that I would be able to accomplish with my capacity. So we use their reports where they say they're not able to do it, in which case that triggers the counselor to know, well, I can't get it solved in state, so I have to look at an out-of-state option. So in essence, what I would be recommending for board action based on no comments in opposition and these comments in favor of is if somebody wanted to put this forward. Just realize also the state rehab council will be taking this all up next week, but that's I'll stop there. Any questions?
All right, do we have a motion to adopt the staff recommendation so we can move this on then to the state rehab council, and then they can have their say about it?
Steven, so moved.
Okay, I have a motion from Steve. Do I have a second? I heard somebody, but I can't tell who it was.
I don't know who it was.
Oh, is that Mary seconding? Okay.
Yes.
Any comments? Yep, any discussion then? I think we flogged this subject pretty well at the last meeting. Hearing no comments, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? Any abstentions?
Eileen, I'm going to abstain.
And
okay.
Rand,
may I ask why? You don't have to answer that, but I'm just curious.
No, I think we've beaten this to death, and I don't want to comment.
Okay,
yeah.
Fair enough.
Al, this is Randa. I'm going to abstain for the same reason and not totally agreeing, but I don't want to go against the majority. Against it either.
Understood. Then the chair is going to rule that we have enough ayes to carry the motion. Without objection, we'll move it on to the state rehab council. Sorry, I just have to I have to get my screen back here because it timed out. So I can look at my agenda and see where we are. Okay, there we are. All right, we're on the budget update. Brian, you have the floor for this matter as well.
Thank you. So the first thing I will say is that yesterday in Congress, the House passed a one-week government funding extension, which would carry the funding to keep the federal government open until December 18th. I believe that this is now in the Senate. That is poised to act on it today to buy that one-week extension period. As you probably know, in Congress, they are looking at whether or not to put a COVID relief package as a separate bill or put it as part of the funding of government. But in any event, I just want folks to be assured that we have sufficient carryover funds in our programs that have federal funding, the programs that come out through both rehab and through the older blind program. We do have sufficient funding based on carryover, but I just wanted to give you an update there. On the state budget side, where we are at right now, is because of the budget situation, there is a freeze of state funded positions, so we are in the process of trying to gain approvals, or in some cases reapprovals to fill positions, which include mobility position in children's services, two mobility positions in adult services, and an education consultant position in children's services. So those positions are all pending, and we're again in the process of seeking permission to see if we could either establish or reestablish those so that we could recruit.
We also, we had indicated, had the federally funded position for both rehab counselors and a rehab program that we're hoping to gain to take that forward for recruitment as well. But I think Andrew's probably going to provide a little bit more of an update on the state budget situation when he gives his update. I tended to speak to Eileen's question earlier in regards to maintenance of effort. Most of the state voc rehab programs have had difficulty in achieving it. We had to submit our preliminary report on the fiscal year in October, which shows that we did not hit our maintenance of effort. And you then have a period of performance where you actually have a full year to pay out all the bills and obligations that you could count towards the maintenance of effort in that period. And then, assuming that, like many other states, I don't anticipate we'll be able to achieve our maintenance of effort requirement, we would then proceed with requesting a waiver of maintenance of effort. One of the bills that had been proposed along the way, one of the COVID relief bills, actually had some language around some waivers, but it's hard to know what is going to end up passing. One of the versions of the House of the COVID relief package actually has some language around funding for business enterprise operators who are out of work. But again, it's so hard to know what will ultimately